speckled perch, crappie. Chances are, if you've gone to a fish fry, be it at your neighbors, your in-laws, your church, you've eaten specks. This week, we sit down with a fisheries biologist from FWC, Alan Martin, to discuss crappie management, spawning, and what recruitment means in fisheries biology, and a whole lot more. Hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Alan Martin with FWC. All right, we got Alan Martin in studio with us. FWC, what are you with FWC?
I'm a regional freshwater fisheries administrator.
Wow. That's, yeah, a mouthful.
That's a mouthful. Basically, I work in the freshwater fisheries management division and kind of responsible for our freshwater fisheries management stuff in the north central region, which is 17 counties, kind of the North Peninsula, basically. And I'm involved with some statewide stuff as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's how you ended up down our area. You're headed to a meeting down south of us. So
yes.
Very cool. Appreciate you coming by. Let's unpack. We're going to talk about arguably speckled perch, right?
Yes.
You're not allowed to say that because you're a biologist and you have to call them crappie.
I can say it, but I call them crappie.
Okay.
You know, the official common name's black crappie. And where I grew up, we call them crappie as well. So
before we get into all that, let's talk about who's Alan. Like, where are you from? How'd you get here? Like, not physically here, but how did you get to Florida?
Yes, I grew up in Western Kentucky, right on Kentucky Lake in that area, and grew up fishing a lot. I was out on the lake by myself in my own boat since I was 10. 162,000 acre reservoir, little pond. And so I think a lot of people thought my dad was crazy and
let
me go
that
out there. And, you know, of course, times are a little different then than they are now, too. But that's kind of, I've always fished, always loved it, always on and in the water any chance I got. And it's kind of where I guess my passion for all this came from. And then growing up, I remember reading some of the, you know, fishing magazines. They always have a quote from the fisheries biologist, and it kind of is like, wow, you can somebody get paid to do this type of stuff. So then I graduated high school and went to Southeast Missouri State
okay.
in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And
is that the Bears?
No, they were the Indians at
the
time.
Okay.
Now they're the Red Hawks.
Gotcha.
Because they had to change the name. And so I went there, got my bachelor's degree in biology with an aquatic area of emphasis. And actually had a guest professor there who was a retired fisheries professor from Auburn, Dr. James Ramsey. And he kind of got me aware of grad school options and how that all worked. And so I started looking into grad schools, looked several different places, and somewhat coincidentally ended up at Auburn and ended up working with Dr. Mike Messina there on a kind of a long-running crappie project. My part of it for my thesis was evaluating length limits and regulations with crappie, and ran all over the state of Alabama catching crappie and doing that.
Lake Eufaula, Lake Martin.
Yeah.
Lake Gunnersville.
All of those. We were more on the Tennessee system and,
okay.
you know, kind of the Alabama River, but we were on about everywhere at some point.
Wheeler.
Yeah. Wheeler, Wilson, Gunnersville, Jones Bluff.
It's beautiful country up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Then ended up getting a job in Florida, started in Ocala.
For FWC?
For FWC, yeah, as a Bio-2, which is kind of our entry-level positions. And I was there for about 6.5 years. And then I moved up to Lake City, which is where my office is now and my current position. And been there now, I guess, about 11 years, almost 12, I guess.
Okay, so we got some follow-ups here. First off, you're from Kentucky. Kentucky or Louisville?
Oh, Kentucky.
Okay, all day, every day?
Yeah, actually for far western Kentucky.
Okay.
And Kentucky's kind of like a lot of states, like Florida, you know, the panhandle's a little different than Miami.
Right.
And Kentucky has those zones. And western Kentucky, where I'm from, it's much more like Tennessee, like Nashville area, as far as people, terrain, that
gotcha.
Type of stuff.
So, Wildcat Blue.
Yes.
Okay. And baseball, we know this because we've talked off air, but baseball, sadly, you are a Cardinals fan, which how did you navigate that? Being from Kentucky, like most of the folks I know from Kentucky are Reds fans, right? That's a Reds region.
Well, first of all, it's not sadly.
Okay.
if I were a Cubs fan, now that would be sadly.
Yeah.
And
touche.
Yeah, I got to pick on you a little bit. But the far western Kentucky is Cardinal territory. And all through like southern Illinois. I mean, we were only about three and a half hours from St. Louis. Probably most people you know from Kentucky is from that central part, which again is vastly different. And it's
the only people I know from Kentucky are from Justified. So anyone from that TV show is the only people I knew from Kentucky, yeah, which that, was not filmed in Kentucky.
And that's
so.
Closer to Red's territory. You know, Cincinnati's right there across the river. So,
no, that's outstanding. So, and then went to Auburn. Do you have an affinity for Auburn football?
Well, of course.
Like, are you a War Eagle guy? Or
so, yeah, War Eagle.
The Iron Bowl, the whole nine yards.
That's like, right.
That's really cool. My daughter wanted to go to Auburn when she was younger. So take us through... this is a loaded question. You know this already, but take us through a day in the life of a, what are you again? A regional fisheries
administrator. Yeah.
Okay. Take us through a day in the life. Like, what does that look like? Or can you not do it in a day?
Yeah. So I always tell people that's the hardest question I have to answer because it's so varied. There is no normal common day. You know, some days I'll be in the office doing the fun administrative stuff. And, other days I'll, as I say sarcastically, the other days I'll be, you know, maybe out on the water, maybe looking at habitat projects we have going on with some of our other sections or divisions or looking to develop some of those. Or a lot of my staff, we do creel surveys where we interview anglers and we do fish sampling. I may help out with that. Those are, of course, the fun days.
Right.
And the days everybody says they want our job. And other days I may be driving to who knows where in the state for a meeting, whether it's a public meeting or whether we have several working groups on different resources. I've been involved with some of those, really involved with one up on the Orange Creek Basin, Orange, La Calusa, Noonans. And so, you know, we do some statewide plans. I've been involved with some of those. So it varies a lot.
Right.
Some days I'm recording a podcast.
There's no recipe that on Tuesdays you're sitting at the desk doing this thing.
Yeah, and that's what I like about it, you know, the variety. You know, of course I like the natural resources and trying to make a difference with fishing, making fishing better. But within that, the variety of things we get to do.
Now, you talked about sampling. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit with this. I know when we interviewed Eric Weather with FWRI, they do sampling as well. Is that, do you guys do that together, or does, like, obviously you don't do it with Eric because he's in the saltwater side, but does FWRI do the sampling as well, or do you also do sampling like in parallel? Like, how does that work?
The answer to all of that's yes. Okay. So we, FWRI, which is our Fish and Wildlife Research Institute, Eric Weather is within the marine portion of that, but there's a section that is a freshwater fisheries research section, and we work with them very closely. They do a lot of sampling, they do a lot of research projects, so project specific, a lot of what we do, and they do some of that. We do long-term monitoring. We have a long-term monitoring program around the state where we do the same standardized type sampling year in and year out, and that lets us look at trends. We're up to, I think we're 12 or 13 years in now. So we're actually starting to have that long-term database, and it's been useful for things like evaluating bass regs and things along those lines.
We talked on the other show, on the Tuesday show a few weeks back about the North American conservation model, and one of the big tenets is science is the primary discharge for wildlife management, and that's exactly what this is, right? This is just collecting all that data so that you can make informed decisions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and so... one of the things, the way we're set up, the way we're organized, and some people don't understand, is fisheries management is more than managing fish populations.
Yes, talk about
this. So there's three components to that. There's the fish population, there's the habitat, and then there's the people component. And you have to have all three of those to have a fishery. You can have a lake full of fish and nobody's allowed to fish it. It's not a fishery. And so we have a section, we call them ARES, our Aquatic Habitat Restoration Enhancement section, that is funded and directed to do habitat projects. And we work with them to develop good projects and the overall management of lakes and rivers and what have you. We also work with our freshwater fisheries research folks who do a lot of our fish sampling. You know, if we need to build a fish population model, if we need to do some of the more technical side of it, that's in their wheelhouse, and they hire people with those expertise and skills. And so we work with them a lot. And then we handle a lot. We do parts of the other two, but we handle a lot of the people component. And that includes gathering input and kind of pulling it all together and coordinating a lot of it. So when I say the people component, that means internal as well. You know, trying to look at the bigger picture. And sometimes that's not just the fish. That's alligators, wading birds, snail kites.
The ecosystem.
Yeah, and that pulls in people from different sections and divisions. And the other thing you mentioned, the data, we've been doing more with human dimensions data. And it's,
what does that mean?
when we do surveys and things like that, we're getting people's opinions, but we have hired some people in the last few years and have made a conscious effort to move into a more formalized, more statistically valid way of collecting this information to where that is actually data that we use.
Gotcha.
It is opinions. It is what the public wants, but it's not just throwing up a survey online.
Right. It's not a random or
it's another method of sampling. We sample fish populations, the human dimension side, you know, they kind of sample the people population and their opinions. And so then we try to balance all of that.
Now, you and I met, it's funny you talk about going to meetings and stuff. You and I met actually at a Kissimmee Channel Lakes meeting, I think, or maybe one of the spray meet. I forget. We've been in a lot of rooms together that were nowhere near it, where either of us are. And you are a listener to our podcast. I know that we've talked about that before, so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Boat Snack, what's the go-to?
Yeah, I'm going to disappoint you on this one a little bit because I have this issue when I get out fishing and I don't really duck hunt, so I'm not sitting in a boat all day.
You don't really duck hunt yet.
Yet, yeah. I'm open to the opportunity, but I get so focused and so into trying to catch fish, I actually forget to even eat lunch most of the time. It'll be 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, man, I'm hungry. I wonder why. And I look down and so I do usually try to take something like beef jerky or whatever. And some days I'll pull that out. Yeah, I just kind of I lose track of time. I get kind of focused on what I'm doing. And
it's very interesting you say that because you may have, like in a previous life, you might have been a fishing guide, because that's kind of like operator 101 is you don't stop to eat. You just keep moving all day. And if your clients stop to eat, that's the time you like get everything re-rigged and stuff. So you just never stop. So
yeah, and I mean,
I'm similar. I like to have a snack like when I'm duck hunting, but when I'm fishing, there is no snack on the boat.
Yeah, especially if I guess have somebody with me, or I have my kids with me or whatever, you know, like you said, that's if they're taking a snack or whatever, I'm trying to get something ready. Or if we have an area we have to idle through or whatever, I'll usually have, you know, a sandwich or a wrap or something.
Wolf it down.
Yeah, I'll kind of eat it while we're doing that, you know.
Yep. Trading spot. I've learned to eat a sandwich while navigating backwater channels and stuff, because that's when you get your break.
I've done that many times.
So we want to talk about crappie. I made myself say it.
You can say specs. It's okay.
I'm going to. You sent me over. You guys have a draft black crappie management plan. I also want to say crappie. What's right? How do you say it? Do you say crappie or crappie?
I say crappie. And
that sounds a little better than crappie.
Yeah, the crappie name is it's a regional, certain areas of the country. The people I'm familiar with to say is more kind of up the East Coast a little bit.
Gotcha.
I don't know if that's the only pocket. That's just the few people I know that tend to say that are from that area.
Specs.
Down here, it's specs or speckled perch or
which
or
they're
have
in
you.
No way part of the perch family, right?
Yeah, no.
That's completely wrong, but that's what we grew up calling them. So
yeah,
it's like it's hard to break that tendency. I saw recently where FWC or they released a press release about fox squirrels. So I don't know if you saw this or not, where it's no longer the Sherman's fox squirrel in Florida. It's the Southern fox squirrel now. And growing up, we always called them Sherman's fox squirrels. It's like, I don't know, I can call it something different.
Yeah, it's hard to break those habits.
Not that we see those very often, but when you do, it's like, oh, that's a Sherman. You'd lecture your kids. I'm sure you're the same way as a dad, right? You have to give them the scientific everything about that animal they see.
Yeah, to some extent. And we actually have a lot of fox squirrels up where we are.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Now, do you suffer from wildlife Tourette's, as Emily would call it? Where when you're driving down the road with your kids or whatever, and a deer crosses the road, you got to yell deer.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sandhill crane and turkey and whatever you see.
Yeah, pretty much.
I didn't know if that was a commonality.
I don't know if it's a common thing, but yeah, I tend to point stuff out.
So you got here. This is available on the website, the Black Crappie Management Plan. How did this document come to exist?
Yeah, so there's on our webpage right now. If you go to myfwc.com and just search.
I'll put a link to it.
Crappie
management plan
is the easiest way to get there. But yeah, it's something we've been working on for a couple years. And what's on the webpage is a draft version. And so we've done a few different management plans. We did a black bass management plan about 10 years ago. And we followed a similar process coming out of the black bass management plan when we reviewed bass regulations. We ended up making some changes across the state on that. But kind of the formula we've followed is when we start to do one of these, we'll go out through various surveys. We'll have some different types of meetings. We've done open house events, different ways to get in touch with people. And we will ask for input. And, you know, at that point, we're just starting. And we want to know kind of, hey, what do you like about crappie fishing right now in Florida? What do you dislike? What do you think we should change? What do you think we should keep? So forth and so on. And we'll gather a lot of that information. Then while all that's going on, because that takes time to set up meetings and coordinate all that, we will also have a group that's working on the plan that will be gathering all of our biological information, any sampling data as far back as we can find it and is relevant, any type of, you know, lake-specific data, regional data.
I saw in there, and I'm going off memory, so I could be wrong, you have X number of lakes and you have a million fish you've sampled. Does that sound right? Like, it's an exponential number.
It's a lot of fish.
Yeah, like, I was reading through it the other night, so I'm going off memory, but it was, you have a lot of data points.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of crappie sampling done in Florida over the last, you know, few decades, so that adds up after a while. And so we get all that biological data, and, you know, sometimes we're building population models, sometimes it's just kind of summary type data, whatever it is we have that we can use. And so we'll get the information, the data from our human dimension stuff and our public meetings and that type of stuff, and we'll get our biological data, and then we kind of compare those and try to balance those and put together a plan that is hopefully outlines a really good way to manage whatever, in this case black crappie, throughout the state. And of course the state's varied and we have all kinds of different systems, so it has to be somewhat broad, but we try to get some specifics in there as well. And then we end up putting a draft out, and this is what's on their webpage now. We had a draft out, and we had a period of time where that was open for comment. There was a box on the webpage that people could provide comments. We had some other folks we reached out to, kind of some technical people, you know, universities, stuff like that, and got directed feedback from them. And then we went back through all those comments and made some edits and tweaks and changes. And so we're in that process of finalizing everything right now.
Cool. And there is no timeliness to this conversation in, as it pertains to the plan. I just thought it was interesting because we're talking about specs in the winter when everyone's going to be fishing for specs. So I just thought it was an interesting, something the agency, I don't know if you guys get enough credit for, is these plans that you put together, because they're very comprehensive. And not to like the black bass plan, the bear, man, like all that stuff is really, really, I feel like you've put it on the right level. Like, we had this conversation the other day about, it's not too technical, but it's also not, for lack of a better term, too dumbed down. It's like right down the middle of the fairway. So I thought this was really interesting. I read through it. It took me not very long. I mean, yeah, I skimmed, but good data, interesting. You could hang out on different points and kind of understand things. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. That's what we try for. I've been involved with the Black Bass Plan and the Black Crappie Plan, and that's one thing we've tried to do is, it's written for an internal and a public document, which can be tough to balance sometimes. And it's something that, you know, when I hire new staff, sometimes, or most of the time, I'll take and say, hey, here's our black bass management plan. Here's kind of the overview of what we do in Florida. And that gives a good starting point, especially if we're hiring someone from out of the state.
Right.
To understand, you know, how our systems work and what have you. And
so you're saying Florida's different?
Florida's different, yeah. And you know, and even within the state, especially when you talk about crappie, a lot of, you know, shallow marshy type lakes, which are common in Florida, people will drift open water to catch them, and then when they're spawning, they'll get up in the vegetation. There's a few lakes around the state that are deeper that the fish don't come into the shallows, or they don't come in for very long, and you can't catch them drifting open water, and they're fishing brush piles in 18 to 20 feet of water.
Which is a more traditional way, like when you talk about up north.
Up through the Midwest, yeah. And up through the up north, that's more of the how they fish for them up there. And so we have a couple lakes that fish that way. And so there's and of course there's the rivers. And
can you give us specific lakes and specific spots?
yeah, you can put those in the show notes.
So
okay. Actually, I could sort of come close. We do have a list of fish attractors on our webpage. And if you search fish attractors, that'll come up. And there's an interactive map. You can see where they are. It gives GPS coordinates.
Those are basically brush piles.
Brush piles. Or and it'll tell you what reefs. It'll tell you what material. Some of them are artificial. Some of them are natural brush. And the webpage will tell you. And a lot of lakes, that's especially early in the crappie season, you know, like this time of year through the midwinter. That's a good place to start if you don't know where you're going. And most of them are marked with buoys, but sometimes the buoys break off, but you have the coordinates. and you can find it with your depth finder and what have you. And if you don't know where to go, it's a good place to start. So yeah, I can sort of give you some spots.
What more could you ask for other than a how-to? Did you tell me this is the second most popular freshwater fish? Is that right?
It's generally considered, the second most popular freshwater sport fish in the state. There are some pockets where catfishing is a little more popular, but statewide, yeah.
And we only have black crappie.
Correct. And we hear that from anglers a lot. Hey, I caught, so many black crappie, so many white crappie. But in Florida, we only have black crappie. And what's going on is when they are in the process of spawning, the males get very, very black in color. And the females don't get as black in color. They're much lighter. And so when people are thinking they're catching black and white crappie in Florida, they're really catching males and females during the spawn. And
so I'm going to put you on the spot after flipping through this plan. Because I grew up as a we fished for everything, we hunted for everything. So we were like consumptionists, not conservationists. We wanted to go catch food, keep food, whatever. So speck fishing was on our list, and when they were biting, we would go speck fish, and when they weren't, we didn't. So I'm not an avid speck fisherman anymore, and I would go tomorrow if I knew where to go and how to do it, but I'm not gonna go figure it out kind of guy. But I want to talk about, as I flip through the plan, in there it talks about recruitment quite a bit. And I don't understand what that means. When it talks about recruitment, we're not talking about recruiting anglers. We're talking about recruitment of spawning, recruitment. Can you unpack that?
Yeah, so in the fisheries world, when we talk about recruitment within a fish population, the term itself is a general term that can be defined in different ways. And basically, it's the process from spawning to hatching to growing to a certain size.
Okay.
And so you can say recruitment is to any given size. And when we use it in a general term, recruitment to the fishery, that's basically just to a catchable size. With the crappie, usually the anglers start catching about 8 or 9 inches. That's kind of when they're switching to fish as their main diet. They're using minnows and jigs. And, you do catch a few smaller than that, but that's usually when they start showing up. And so when we talk about recruitment, it's basically everything of getting the fish to a catchable size.
Okay.
So that includes the spawn and spawning success, but also growing through those first couple years or year or so to get to that size. And crappie are notorious for having, some people will call it cyclic recruitment or spawning. And I don't like that term too much because that implies a pattern. Every 3 years, every 4 years.
Like a dispause or something.
Yeah, but it's more of a sporadic or boom and bust type deal. And it can be, you can get 2 or 3 really good years in a row or 2 or 3 really bad years in a row, or they can alternate. It depends. And we're not 100% sure on exactly why.
The science community at large.
Yeah, there's been some work that shows some pretty strong support in some of the big reservoirs up through the Midwest that has to do with water level at time of spawn. And there's a little bit of evidence in Florida that can trigger good spawns if the water pulses up at the right time, but it's not really definitive. And I think there's other factors involved as well. So what'll happen is you get one really good spawn and those fish will recruit into the fishery and they will basically carry the fishery. Could be for a couple years because the next couple spawns may not be very good. And so your recruitment's low for a couple years.
Which makes it hard to set regulations. And
yeah, and actually there's quite a bit of work. Some of it's been done at University of Florida. Some of what I looked at actually looked at that in my master's thesis. And that variability in recruitment tends to trump a lot of other things in the fact that, in a lot of cases the variability is really what determines how the fishing is, much more than a regulation in a lot of times. And
say that again. So the variability in recruitment ends up affecting how the fishing will be more so than regulations would, or
a lot of times with crappie, that's the case. And partly too, because they're a pretty relatively short lived species.
Okay.
We do see some 10, 12 years old, but I'd say the average fish makes it through 3 to 5 years, 6 years. And so there's a fairly high natural mortality, which is dying without fishing, basically on their own. And they are a species that people fish for and keep and harvest, unlike bass. So
you don't catch and release crappie.
Not many people do. There are some that do, but most people are catching and keeping and what have you. And so because of that, you know, you have to have those good spawns every so often. If you get 3, 4, 5 years because of low water, because of whatever, that's when you're going to really notice it. And we've got some interesting work that's been done up on Loch Lusa Lake, a couple other places, where we've got consistent data over a number of years in trawling data, which is where you pull a big trawl net behind
otter trawl.
Otter trawls, yes.
That's what it calls it in the plan. I was like, why is it called otter trawls?
That's the term.
Why do we call dogs dogs?
Yeah, I don't know exactly where the otter part came from, other than the big boards at the front of the net that hold it open are called otter boards.
Okay.
And so it's an otter trawl. I don't know where the term came for the otter boards, though.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to interrupt you before you... How does this work now? Is this a net you're pulling behind, or are you...
Think of your classic shrimp boat.
Okay.
It's just a smaller version of that. You know, with the big nets they pull behind. And so you pull it a certain speed for a certain amount of time, so you know how much water, you know the size of the net, you know how much water you're basically pulling through. And you are targeting the small crappie, age zeros, age ones. So... I don't know, 3 inches, 2-3 inches at most. You'll catch some bigger ones, but some of the bigger ones will swim away too. You're pulling slow. But what we've found is that, and other people across the country have found, that at age one, that year class strength is pretty much set. In other words, all the fish, so with a lot of fish, the number of fry, which, you know, is right after they hatch out, is a lot of our warm water sport fish anyway, is really high. And in that first year, a lot of them will die off because there's just not food and habitat.
Right.
That's their spawning strategy.
That's why they have a billion eggs or whatever.
Exactly. You know, as humans, we have one or two kids or
the
4 or 5 and we take care of them. You know, fish just kind of put them out there and let them go do their thing. And so when we say the year class is set, that means all that has already happened in that first year. Once they get to the first year, those are the fish that are likely to recruit up to catchable size.
Gotcha.
And so you can catch them at that size, and then we've actually been able to sort of predict, hey, in 2 to 3 years, fishing's going to be pretty good here.
Gotcha.
Or the next couple years are going to be kind of lean. And it's been fairly accurate in some cases. And so we're working to develop that a little more and across the state. And that helps with anglers. It helps with, like, fish camp owners. You know, hey, why aren't people catching fish? You know, is there something wrong with the lake? And we can look at the data and say, well, no, we've just had, you know, you're coming into a window where we've had 2 or 3 kind of weak spawns, and, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And so, but we have a really strong one this last year. So in a couple of years, it's going to come right back up. It's
gotcha.
Not necessarily anything wrong with the lake. It's just the way the fish operate.
Gotcha. Okay. Before we move on from that, how do I use recruitment in a terminology? Do I say there was good recruitment in this class of crappie? Do I say there was, how do I phrase that?
Typically, you know, your good or poor recruitment in a given year.
Okay, there was good recruitment, there was bad recruitment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of people can think of it as almost synonymous with spawning. You know, it's just the recruitment is the actual growing to that. So you could, for just as an example, you could have a case where you have a really good spawn and then something happens. And, you know, it could be a drought. It could be for more of like snook or something like that. It could be like a really cold winter that hits right when they're little.
A red tide or something.
And so they never grow to catchable size. So you had a really good spawn, but 2 or 3 years later, your recruitment's poor.
Okay.
Because something
that
happened
was a good
in between
example.
There. You know, with crappie and with bass, a lot of times if you have the good spawn, that just translates to good recruitment. But there is the potential something could happen in there.
Okay. No, that explained it exactly like I needed to hear it. So and recruitment doesn't equal legal size. It equals catchable size, right?
It all depends on how you define it.
Okay.
You know, sometimes we will talk about recruitment to, if there is a lake, crappie, we don't have a statewide minimum size limit, but if there's a lake, you know, we may talk about recruitment to that legal size.
Okay.
If a lot of our lakes don't have a minimum size limit for crappie, so when we say recruitment, we're generally talking about to a catchable size or into the fishery.
Gotcha. That's good. Also, I noticed in this plan while I was looking through it, you guys do tagging studies. And one of the things we wanted to talk about was, what do people do with a tagged fish? Like, this is a little bit different world, right?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because we get that a lot. So what we're after when we do tagging studies is what we call exploitation. And what that actually is the percentage of a population that is being harvested by anglers in a given year.
Okay.
So if however many crappie are out there, if 20% of those crappie in that lake are caught and taken home and kept by anglers, that's a 20% exploitation rate.
Okay.
And, you know, so that is part of the mortality component. Mortality is any way the fish dies, whether it's natural, whether it's angler caught, whatever. And so what we really want to know from that tagged fish is, was it kept or was it released?
Okay.
And so when an angler catches a tagged fish, especially a crappie, in most of our freshwater tagging studies, it works the same way. There's a lot of tagged bass out there, too, and it works the same way, is do whatever you would normally do with that fish. If you would normally release it because it's too small, because you're just not keeping fish that day, that's fine. Cut the tag. Use, you know, some
you
pliers
want the tag
or something.
Data.
They, well, the tags have rewards on them.
Okay.
And so they have to send in the tag to get the reward. But we also want that tag. We keep track of how many tags are out there. So cut the tag off. There's a phone number on the tag. And call that number, and they'll walk you through. They'll ask you some questions. Where was it caught? Did you keep it or release it? That's the key one most of the time. And, you know, some other questions. And then they'll have you send the tag in, and you'll get a reward for it. And the rewards vary, and they're usually printed on the tag.
Okay.
Could be anything from $25 to $200. I mean, it ranges. And
do you have a list of where those tags are so we can go catch those particular tags?
I do have a list.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep it to myself. So, and when we don't, and actually that's kind of important, we want people to know there's tags out there. We don't want them to know where.
Right.
Because that can
you
actually...
You want it to occur in the natural...
We're sampling what really goes on. And so if we drive effort to a given lake because they know there's a bunch of tags out there, and then more fish are caught, more fish are kept, it skews the data. So that's one reason when we put out tagged fish, we don't really announce necessarily where they are.
I never knew there were tagged crappie until I was yesterday years old.
Yeah. And we have several different places around the state. And,
okay.
And so, but tagged crappie, bass, most of them are the same. Now, if you would normally keep that fish, that's fine. Go ahead and keep it. That's okay. We've had people say, oh, man, I caught a tagged crappie, and you know, but it had a tag. I didn't want to mess anything up, so I released it. It's like, well, no, we want you to keep it if you would normally keep it.
Because, honestly, that hurts your data because you don't have the data on that fish being caught.
Yeah, it's just a lack of a data point at that point.
Right. Like, well, yeah, it doesn't hurt it. It just,
yeah,
it's not an additive.
Yes.
So exploitation is part of mortality.
Yes.
And it's across the entirety of the population within a given lake.
In a given year.
So in 2020, there'll be an exploitation rate. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
For Lake Okeechobee for crappie.
Yes.
Okay. So, and that falls into the mortality rate, which I'm guessing comes under, do you guys do compensatory and additive mortality in fisheries management like we do in hunting?
Not quite the same way. I mean, we look at basically fishing mortality and we look at natural mortality, which can be hard to get to.
Natural mortality being fish just die or they get eaten by a predator.
Something natural, not an angler catching them. And so those two things add up to your total mortality.
Okay.
Look at that at mortality rates. And if we know, so there is some compensatory stuff going on there because a fish can only die one way.
Right.
And, you know, so that's kind of the theory in general. When you have a short-lived species, you can fish them harder. Because if you don't catch them in the next 2 or 3 years, they're going to die anyway. Whereas if you have a long-lived species, especially some of your saltwater species, you know, that live 30, 40 years, if you fish them harder, you know, they're not reproducing as prolifically. They would be out there if you're not fishing them.
Gotcha.
And so you can't fish them as hard. And so that's where some of the difference comes in, depending on species.
So I want to talk for a second about stakeholder engagement. Like that's a huge component of this whole process. And I think we said earlier the plan we're talking about, it's been going on for years. Like this is not a new thing.
It's been about a couple year process.
Yeah. Right. How does stakeholder engagement work, and how do you, and what I mean broadly by that is how do you get information from stakeholders, and what could we do better to get you better data?
One of our biggest difficulties in the freshwater fishing realm, as far as whether we're getting information on bass fisheries or crappie fisheries, is actually getting people to show up to meetings, getting people to fill out surveys. We put a lot of effort into that because we want that input. We want to use that input. And it's, for whatever reason, on the freshwater side, you know, unless there's an issue with a lake or something like that, it's hard.
Unless there's a controversial thing going on.
Exactly. Or where,
a hot topic.
Either a hot topic or it could be something like a drought going on where there's access issues. It's not really a hot topic, but it's something that is problematic or, you know, causing issues for people.
Yeah, that's probably better said.
Yeah, well, it could be either one. And so it's really hard to get people to show up sometimes. We struggle with that. So we'll put out through all our different channels, social media, our traditional news releases, our webpage, and sometimes it'll be meetings, sometimes it'll be open house events, sometimes we'll send surveys out. We use our license database sometimes to email people surveys. We do printed surveys that we hand out when we're doing our creel surveys and we're out interviewing anglers, because you reach, there's a lot of anglers, especially when you get into the realm of crappie, that don't do online anything.
Right.
Yeah, they the demographic there, there's a lot of older folks that just...
My dad is not going to take a and that's nothing, there's a lot of folks my dad's age that would gladly take an online survey. They're in my Facebook groups and stuff, but my dad's not going to.
Yeah, but if someone like your dad, if he was out fishing and we handed him a little booklet and he has to just circle his answers and put a sticker on it and drop it in the mail, it's postage paid and everything, right, he's probably more likely to do that. And so that's why we use different methods, because different people will respond to different things. Just the same way you use different baits when you're fishing, different individual fish will, you know, strike different things. Yeah, we do that up front on these plans, and then we'll usually do it once there is a draft plan or any other big management action. One example is the bass regulations I mentioned earlier. We went around and did... It's been a few years, either 10 or 11, I think it was, open house events all over the state. We got that information. We took our biological data, and we kind of looked at, well, what do we need to do with bass regulations around the state? And then we ended up proposing some changes. And then we went back around with more meetings and online surveys and paper surveys and what have you, and got information like, hey, did we hit the mark? And, you know, it's never going to be 100%.
Right.
But we feel like we can get closer to balancing the biological needs and what people want by getting that information up front, and then, you know, getting feedback of did we hit it, did we miss it. And I kind of use the analogy of going down the road, driving down the road. Our biological data kind of tells you where the ditches are. You don't want to go in the ditch on either side, but sometimes the road's narrow, sometimes the road's wide, but whether you go down the right hand side or the left hand side, that's where a lot of the public information data comes in.
Gotcha. That's a good analogy. That's a really good analogy. So theoretically, what would help all fishermen, in this case, fishermen and hunters across the board from an agency perspective, is engagement, or fishermen and non-hunter, like everyone and anyone, you view every resident of Florida as a stakeholder. Well, every...
On some level,
and
yeah.
Non-residents and
non-residents, especially with the crappie angling, there's a lot of people that come down, snowbirds that come down during the winter. And so we want to hear from them, but we also want to hear from the residents. You know, they're here all the time. And so we have to... With this plan, we had to make sure that our timing was right when we did our stakeholder outreach, because otherwise we would miss a segment of that angling population.
Right.
Because they're back up in the northern states or whatever. If you do surveys about crappie in June and July, nobody's thinking about crappie, nobody's out fishing for them, and a lot of them aren't even in the state.
Why are they better to fish for in the winter?
It has a lot to do with the way they spawn. They spawn through late winter, early spring, okay, and they'll start gathering up into tighter schools.
Like December, January?
It depends on where you are in the state, obviously. Okay. There's a big difference between North Florida and South Florida.
Yeah.
And so it kind of, you'll see it move from south to north just like everything else. And, you know, they'll start congregating in tighter schools, and they'll be feeding, kind of getting that energy reserve for, you know, producing eggs and what have you, just like any other species. And then when they come into the grass on a lot of lakes, and, you know, anglers know to target them there, and just kind of makes them...
All right, I've got a stupid question. As someone that's caught a million of these, do they catch them off beds like they do bream and stuff?
You can. When they're in on the grass, that's usually what's going on.
Okay.
You know, it's not... usually not as visible, and part of it has to do with they really thrive. Most of our best crappie fishing systems and lakes are usually darker water.
Why is that?
A lot of it is the lower part of the food chain is based on phytoplankton and zooplankton that the small fish eat, and you have to have that productive system to have the really good crappie populations. It kind of feeds that. And those productive systems, you know, they have algae in the water. They're darker water, so you're not seeing... I mean, they're in the clearer lakes, and you sometimes will see them, but a lot of our... when you think about the big crappie lakes in Florida and rivers and what have you, they're usually darker colored water.
Like tannic?
Tannic or just nutrient rich.
Okay.
You know, because that's feeding the phytoplankton, which is the base of the food chain, which works its way all the way up.
Gotcha. Sorry, I kind of hijacked where we were going there on stakeholder engagement. But one of the most important things anyone listening to this to do is, even if it's a species like this, like tangentially, I would say if I got a survey about crappie, I'd pass on it because I don't really fish for them. But the best thing I can do from an agency perspective and from a fishery perspective is participate in that survey, even if I say I don't fish for these, but I'd like to one day or whatever, you know, fill in. Is that accurate? I mean, is that,
yeah,
gives
I mean,
you more data points?
Yeah, it's more data points. And, you know, we're looking for information. Just because someone may not call themselves a crappie fisherman doesn't mean they don't ever fish for them.
Right.
You know, they may only fish for them once or twice a year and, you know, catch a mess or two to put in their freezer and because they're really good to eat.
Very good to eat.
They're my favorite freshwater fish to eat. And, you know, but they may bass fish the rest of the year and call themselves a bass fisherman. But, you know, so they have input. And we'll usually have a question on there, you know, how frequently do you fish? If it's a species-specific survey, how frequently do you fish? And, you know, so if we get kind of some splits in the data, then we can look at, well, is this coming from the people that fish more often or less often? Or
gotcha.
It kind of helps us understand what's going on.
There's an interesting dichotomy, I guess, there in the idea of public trust where it cuts both ways. And I think that's a thing we sometimes as sportsmen forget. I say we, pointing to me, not you. Not that you're not a sportsman, but I'm speaking for sportsmen here. In that sometimes we say we would like the regulations to be built all around us, and you have, like you were saying earlier, you've got stakeholders from out of state, you've got stakeholders that don't fish at all and could care less about this. Like, at some point, you do have to take into account all manner of stakeholders across the board. Is that's fair?
Yeah, and it's sometimes is weighted. I mean, sometimes the, you know, the anglers that fish for them a lot, you know, will have slightly different opinions, and. We kind of look at, well, if we skew a little towards the people that fish for them a lot, how does that negatively impact the other folks?
Right.
And if so, what's the trade-off? If it doesn't, then, you know, okay, maybe we can lean that way a little bit. But yeah, it's a broad group, and not everybody wants the same thing.
Do you fish for crappie much? Do you get to fish for them much?
I do. I wouldn't say a lot, but usually two or three times a year.
Okay.
And it's, again, kind of that springtime. I wouldn't classify myself as a good or avid crappie angler. Like when they're easy to catch and they're spawning and, you know,
that's when I
can go get them and I love eating them. So.
And anyone listening to this, if they get on fire and you want to call me, I will come fish for them with you because I love to catch them. This is one of the few areas where I'm more into catching than fishing. Like, yeah. I recognize both sides of that. In this area, I want to catch.
Yeah, and it's fun when they're biting, and you know, usually use light tackle, you know, 6-8 pound tests on a light spinning rod, and it's fun. I mean, you're not gonna pull out your medium heavy casting rod, and you won't know you have anything.
I can leave
there,
the snook tackle at home.
Yeah.
All right, let's play a game for a second. If I said fisheries management's not a thing, what would you be doing? I didn't prep you for that at all, did I?
No, not at all. I really have no idea.
Like, you can't imagine doing something else?
I really can't. I mean, it's. Like I said, from the time I read fishing magazines when I was younger, it's just kind of been where I've always gone. I mean, I would think something biological, you know, it's just kind of where I've been. I mean, it may not be fisheries management, but something in the biological
realm. It's hard for
realm.
You to get away from that.
Yeah, it
and
is.
That's kind of why I alluded that question and didn't prep you for it is I think it's illustrative. You know that I deal with a lot of folks around the state and the agency, and I see that in a lot of them. Like, this is what they love to do. Like, this is what drives them, the science, the biology, the fishery, the whatever, the resource. So,
yeah, I mean, I think ideally, but it's still tied to it, you know, if I could make a living guiding or, you know,
right.
That way I get to do it, you know.
Right, exactly. You'd still want to be on the water.
But that's still related. I mean, I grew up on the water. I get cranky if I haven't been on the water in a while. It's float therapy, you know. And sometimes I can kind of scratch that itch, you know, through work when we're sampling or, you know, other times it's getting out fishing or what have you. But
all right, Alan. So if anybody has questions about this, whether black crappie management plan or black crappie in the state period or speckled perch in the state period, any of the three names that I want to call it. they could reach out to you, they could reach out to your local FWC biologist, but you could even help them find somebody in their region or whatever, right?
Yes.
So we'll put your email in the show notes. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you so much for being willing to come on and do this and have this conversation with us. And I'm sorry about your Cardinals fandom. Hopefully you can recover from that. That sounds like a mission field for me.
Well, that's all right. We're going to talk about World Series championships here in a minute. And,
man.
It'll be kind of short on your end. So, but no, I appreciate you having me on kind of what you guys are doing on having these conversations and trying to get information out. We struggle with getting information out to people and how to do that. And I think you guys have a good audience and hopefully people find it interesting and want to know more.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks again to Alan Martin and FWC for being so generous with their time and spending time talking specs with us. For more information on black crappie fishing in Florida, check out myfwc.com. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, please make sure to leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend about the show. Or if you really, really love it, you can contribute to the show on Patreon. Remember, this is our last conversation until 2020. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next year.